The fourth one, RDS, stands for Resource Description Framework, which is the underpinning syntax of the World Wide Web, this semantic web. And some more preamble, this presentation is slightly orthogonal to the theme of the conference, in that I'm not going to be talking about interoperability of terminologies, but of a much broader set of issues that have come about by representing the structures that hold those terminologies in semantic web compatible representations. However, I think I'm going to deliberately confuse everybody with terminology, because terminology is an issue, and point out that every semantic web statement, or triple in RDF, is in fact a statement about something and is about a subject. So I think it's quite important to understand that the semantic web itself is about aboutness, and for every triple that can be used to express a terminology concept is going to have some kind of meta-language attached to it, which is subject, has subject, object. If everybody's confused, that's my intention. Terminology is a serious problem. We keep using words like subject to mean quite different, contextual, quite different things. Okay, the overview is, I'll give you some background to FRBR, FRAD, and a tiny little bit of FRASAD. Talk about some general issues that have arisen through the representation of these structural models in RDF. Talk a little bit about the relationship with RDA, Resource Description Access, and ISBD, the International Standard Bibliographic Description. And then finally suggest some ways of improving interoperability within the semantic web. So, functional requirements for bibliographic records, which is in institutions, but it's an incomplete model of the bibliographic universe. It does not address the concept of authorities. Authorities being entities used as access points to bibliographic records. FRBR basically talks about what's in the bibliographic record as opposed to how you get access to it. Because it was incomplete and authorities had not been addressed within FRBR, a separate initiative subsequent to FRBR's publication was started, Functional Requirements for Authority Data, and that was published in 2009. The gap is significant for some of the things that I'm about to say. And perhaps setting a trend, FRAD itself is incomplete because it did not address the issue of subject authority data, which is in fact the theme of this conference. Not entirely, that will be the last mention that I will make of FRASAD, because the next two presentations will go into it in much more detail. Another point to note is that although these models are each incomplete within themselves and they build on their predecessors, that the FRBR review group of IFLA has taken on board the task of producing a consolidated model, and the work has already started on that. And in fact, that work is being stimulated by the effort to represent the three models independently within semantic web terms. In representing these models, you have to do some fairly deep analysis of what the model actually means, and you have to overcome the terminology issues. RDA is a relatively latecomer on the scene. It's Resource Description and Access. Interestingly enough, its title is RDA, Resource Description and Access. Its basization is now almost complete. Unlike FRBR, FRAD, and FRASAD, RDA is about the content of a bibliographic record, not about its structure. So it complements the model. One is about content, the other one is about context, I guess you could say. As RDA was being developed, there was a meeting in London at the British Library in April 2007 between representatives of RDA, which was a pure library world initiative, and this new thing that was making a lot of noise elsewhere, semantic web communities, in particular Dublin Core, and SCOS and IEEE LOM, the Learning Object Metadata Schema. We had a meeting in London in 2007, and as a result of that meeting, the Dublin Core Metadata Initiative RDA Task Group was set up, and in particular was asked, it made logical and practical sense to therefore ask that FRBR itself should be modelled in RDF. And rather than get a non-IFLA group, because RDA has nothing to do with IFLA, rather than ask the non-IFLA group RDA to develop this representation, instead the IFLA group itself, the Ferber Review Group, it was suggested should develop the representation of FRBR, FRAD, etc. And just to make life like life complicated, at the same time all of this is going on, another metadata structure and quasi-content standard, International Standard Bibliographic Description, was undergoing its own tortuous evolution. It's a mixture of structure and content guidelines. Some of you may know that initially ISBD was produced in separate editions for separate types of material. Was 2 weeks ago. It's been extended, so if you still have comments to make about ISBD, please do send them in. ISBD, quite independently of these other initiatives, decided that it really needed an XML representation of its structure. ISBD is mainly used by national libraries, and specifically for the production of national bibliographies, which are not the same things as catalogues. And an XML representation was thought to offer much better opportunities for exchanging data between different countries via national library systems. But because of the work that was going on already with RDF representations, we took an early decision to use the XML representation of RDF rather than some kind of XML based on the content of ISBD itself. So RDF can be expressed in XML, and it seemed to make perfect sense given that ISBD is also, of course, and representing those interconnections in the semantic web, the technical world, seemed to be a good idea. So now we have IFLA undertaking two parallel initiatives involving semantic web representation, the FR initiatives and the ISBD initiative, and some interest being expressed by other IFLA groups in the potential of the semantic web. Now, one of the things, as Antoine said yesterday, that's required for all of this is a URI. Rule number one, you have to have a URI for machine interpretation. URIs are generated within so-called namespaces. Namespaces are like HTTP URL addresses with something added to the end. You don't have to worry about it. However, it seemed that if IFLA was going to be involved with a number of initiatives, that it really ought to have a structure for supporting these HTTP URIs, and that they should be useful. They should lead to something that a human can use. This is called dereferencing in RDF terminology. IFLA decided it would be a very good idea if it had a task group to look at the much broader issue, to provide a set of requirements and options for meeting those requirements, to support the application of IFLS standards in semantic web communities. This is the so-called namespaces task group. A report has been submitted to IFLA, and we're expecting substantial further discussion at the next IFLA meeting in August this year. Okay, that was the background, some methodology. We're using the National Science Digital Library's metadata registry for the basic representation. It is SCoS-enabled, so any of you who wish to create SCoS vocabularies, I think you might find the NSDL registry a very useful tool. You don't have to understand the diversions are also extremely important. So it provides a reasonable range of facilities, but it's by no means completely comprehensive. So it allows you to add SCoS labels, definitions, scope notes, and so-called property ranges and domains. These are things which restrict properties or relationships within RDF. The functional requirements family, the three models, are all entity relationship models. And that makes them particularly easy to translate into RDF. There is a standard methodology for doing this. So an entity in an ER, or entity relationship model, generally is the equivalent of an RDF class. So FRBR has an entity called work, and that has become a class in RDF. Entity attributes, what we would call is a controlled terminology in RDF, it means relationship. An example is the relationship in FRBR of intended audience. And that has become labeled has intended audience in the RDF property. And of course, that would be far too simple. So there's another set of parts of the relationship part of the ER model. And relationships, as I've said already, translate directly into RDF properties as well. An example of that is the relationship between FRBR work and expression, which is work is realized through expression. If this all sounds very pedantic, it has to be, because all of this needs to be used by machines, not humans, and machines are very, very, very dumb. You must explain everything to the machine, everything. Another part of the methodology is that we are trying to, is that FRBR has been around for 11 years, and although there don't seem to be many implementations of it, we simply don't know whether somewhere in the world there is a mature implementation of FRBR. Of course, this will not be RDF. It will be some other kind of structure. And if they are to then use the RDF representation, they need to see the human relationship between the machine bits and the human readable bits. So one of the things we've done, I gave you an example earlier, is attribute names are prefixed with has. There's contention in RDF about this. One school of thought says you just use the attribute name, but that's less readable and is omnidirectional. Has is unidirectional, extremely important. Something has a property. And then the inverse is something is a property of. Okay. Now, in the single attribute name approach, both properties are called the same thing. Needlessly reinvent URIs. So any classes and properties that were declared in a prior model are being reused in the subsequent model. So FRAD reuses some classes and properties from FRBR, and in turn, FRSAD will reuse some of the properties in FRAD. So the FRBR expression has an identical definition and scope in both FRAD and FRBR, so there's no need to reinvent it for FRAD. And similarly, the property has key for a musical work It is also easily represented in Fred using exactly the same property. However, we haven't gone totally with the spirit of the open world semantic web. We are not currently going to reuse any resources from external communities such as Friend of a Friend. That's likely to occur later. This is a big learning curve for IFLA. You know, IFLA's never done anything like this before. It's proving to be very, and of course the machine doesn't care if it's going through five chains of owl same as to establish that A is the same as D. The machine's going to do it in a blink of an eye, so the number of stages along the way is fairly irrelevant. Another interesting aspect of the functional requirements families is that the attribute properties all have a domain, that is, they must all be applied to a particular concept, a particular entity, but the value of the property has no definition, or in RDS speak, no range. So the range is simply not declared, and this is specifically mentioned in FRBR, that the attributes, the values of those attributes are unspecified, deliberately unspecified, to allow FRBR to be extended by other communities. So the domain of the FRBR has key property is work, but it has no value, completely open. However, the relationship properties do have a domain and range because they are between two entities and those entities are specified. So the FRBR is realized through property, has a domain work and the range expression. This is extremely important because if anybody uses that property, the instance values surrounding that property, like my work, is realized through your expression. My work is a human label. The machine does not know that my work, because it's got the word work in it, is a work. But it does know it has to be a work because it's been declared, work has been declared as the domain of the property. So you can infer from the instance triple, my work is realized through your expression, that my work is a work. And your expression is an expression. It's going to be very important when the several hundred million ISBD based records such as Mark 21 complete records are enabled by specifying domain and expression. So I don't have to say my work is a work because it's inferred from the use of the property. This is machine reasoning. Okay, some technical issues, some general and non-technical issues have arisen, which I think are also important about translating real-world stuff. The documentation is inconsistent. This is the human documentation. It's written for human consumption, after all, not for machine consumption. And I think we'd all get rapidly bored if the same phrase was used over and over and over again. So they've had to vary the phraseology. So the words are different. For example, the words prior, preceding, and first are used, are scattered throughout FRBR. And it's not entirely clear whether first means prior, or prior means first, particularly when you have a second. You know, are we talking meant? There are also inconsistencies, and I think these are minor typographical problems within the labels of things. So there's a regular labeling convention in FRBR, which is to do with relationship properties. And they precede relationship properties with has a. But every so often, the article a is dropped. So has a reproduction and has reproduction both occur in FRBR. Now this is of no importance whatsoever to RDF because this is human readable stuff. And the machines don't read the human readable stuff, they only read the machine stuff, which is the URIs. However, There are issues here. These are minor inconsistencies, but I can imagine in other documentation that there are major inconsistencies, and they all have to be worked out before you can make an accurate representation. As an example of the importance of this, FRBR's documentation refers to and in the first pass of the representation, that's what we did. But then, inviting other people to review it, they said these subtypes can't be subclasses because, in fact, their definitions overlap. They're not discrete. And then when we go back to the people who wrote the document, they say, no, the subtypes were just kind of illustrations. So they've used a technical term for a non-technical area of FRBR. Here's another point of contention in the semantic web community. URIs are intended for machine consumption and machine consumption only. But programmers find it convenient if the URI has some kind of mnemonic value so that they don't have to go and remember what this actually refers to in terms of a label or a definition. We've chosen to use opaque URIs. That is, they have no semantic content whatsoever. They are just a number. A URI. So, and you have to look it up or dereference it to find out that 1001 refers to FRBR, is work. Other semantic web communities would have put the word work in place of 1001 so that the programmer could remember that this refers to the entity work. But we don't do this. No. Why? Because IFLA operates in a multilingual environment, and work is an English term. Why should the English, the Anglophone countries, make it easier for programmers who understand English and favor them over programmers who only understand German or Chinese or Japanese or whatever? So we've tried to avoid the Anglophone bias. Hence, we're using opaque URIs. Labels, which are in natural language, of course, are represented in English because the source document is in English. But there are many translations of FRBR's documentation via code. So it's very, very easy to add the translations in. You can also change, subsequently, the labels, not the definitions, but the labels, to suit different communities. But the URI itself must not change. So if in future IFLA decided that the word work wasn't the appropriate word and they wanted to substitute the word, resource, then having a URI that's got work on the end of it, which you may not change, you must not change it, then becomes counterproductive. So it's another reason for going with opaque URIs. Big question. Do differences in the documentation, and there are significant differences between FRBR, FRAD, and FRSAD, do they actually reflect real semantic differences? Are they typographical devices or readability devices or what? Or do they really reflect a different semantic? We need to discuss this very closely. Here's a minor. Time FRAD was being developed some years later, and this is where the time gap becomes important. Thinking had developed, and the representation of things had developed. And it was pointed out that, for example, that definition could refer to a manifestation, an artistic manifestation. So if I take a technical manual and recast it in the form of blank verse, and then produce a sculpture based on the blank verse, that's a manifestation. That's still a distinct intellectual or artistic creation. And we need to distinguish between works, expressions, manifestations in FRBR. So FRAD decided to correct this by adding the phrase, that is, it's to do with the intellectual or artistic content, not form. Clear as mud? I suspect so. Is there a semantic difference between these two definitions? The jury is yet to decide. On Monday, the 15th of August, which is when the FRBR review group is going to be looking at all of this. In FRBR, a person is simply defined as an individual. Trouble is, in FRAD, there's an obvious semantic difference in the definition. It's an individual or a persona or an identity. And here's the killer one. It can be established by an individual and by a group. Now, a group is not an individual. Therefore, there is a complete semantic disjointness between FRBR's definition of person and FRAD's definition of person. And I think there may be a further difference in FRASAD, but I'm not aware of it at this stage. Some ontological issues. The source documentation, because it's written for humans, assume that humans can make all sorts of inferences from for themselves. The only thing that the source documentation generally represents is pairs of properties that are the pattern that I said earlier, because I'm using the language of the documentation as far as possible. So only these inverse properties are actually explicitly mentioned as being inverse properties. The attribute properties themselves are not inverse properties by definition, because they have no range. And if you flip it around, you're then getting a no domain property with a domain with a class as a range. That doesn't work, and it's not what's intended. So the attribute properties have no inverses, but there's a whole bunch of other property types, some of which have been alluded to in earlier papers. There are transitive properties: A property B, B property C, inference A property C. That's transitive. Asymmetric. A property B infers not B property A. Disjoint. Something which is disjoint. A member of a class cannot be a member of a disjoint class. This is by definition. And these are inference rules. The semantic web is about making inferences, not about representing data. So has an alternate, this is an interesting one, because this is the one area of the documentation where we had to make a decision. There is a property called has an alternate, which is exists between expressions and manifestations. It's symmetric. If expression A has an alternative expression B, then by definition, expression B is an alternative to expression A. They have equal weight. But the documentation says that has an alternate has an inverse property called is an alternate too. So if you make it symmetric, you don't need the inverse, because the inverse is implied by the symmetric nature of the property. So it's likely that that particular property is an alternate too will be deprecated and made redundant. Finally, needs to be sent a corporate body or an event. A work is not an event, a person is not an event. These are powerful inferencing tools. When you have hundreds of millions of triples, some of which are incomplete, all using different URIs that are glued together with OWL same as, with all the dangers that we've seen already, then being able to infer that this cannot be that is just as important as inferring that it must be that. We've heard about the dangers of OWL same as. We've got to glue these models together and produce the consolidated version. So the relationships between the different components of the model are likely to be declared using equivalence properties, such as the SCOS properties for matching, or the umbel-like property, or OWL same as in some instances. Or indeed, as will be the example, as will occur with probably the person example, because the semantic, and there's another complication which I'm not going to mention, to do with fictional people. Because the NSDL registry does not handle this more complicated ontological relationships, it's likely to be published as a separate document from the registry output. And all of this work is obviously informing how we should approach the consolidated model. And indeed, it's likely that some additional classes and properties are going to be required to glue these models together. Okay, that's complicated enough, but now we turn our attention to other models. RDA. RDA has had to declare parallel declarations of the FRBR classes because RDA refers to them. Now, this has actually been a bit of a leapfrog race. It was originally thought, as you know, that RDA would be published 18 months ago, and there was no way that the FRBR representation would be ready by then. There was then a delay with the RDA stuff. So we thought that the FRBR stuff might catch up and that the RDA could reuse the FRBR classes and properties. But then there's been delays with the FRBR stuff. And right now, I have to say that the RDA declarations have been put on hold because they're publishing the product and they don't want people to get confused. So the RDA representation of RDA itself, the RDF representation, along with these FRBR classes, has been put off. And it's still possible that the FRBR stuff will be published later this year, and so RDA can reuse it. But this is actually extremely important because this is how these are different communities in different tracks with different contexts, different rates of progress. But they're all talking about the same thing. They're all librarians. So this kind of real practical stuff has to be taken into account. There's also some conflicts. FRBR does not allow this relationship. Manifestations or works are connected via expressions and only via expressions. So there's a bit of an issue to be discussed between the two communities. Another issue, which I'm sure some people in the audience are already thinking about, is that FRBR, in retrospect, extremely stupidly groups some of the entities. In fact, it groups its entities into three sets, which a lot of people have interpreted as superclasses, but they're not. They're a convenience for making a simpler entity relationship diagram. So there's been a lot of talk about this. RDA wants to declare these as superclasses, because if you don't, you have to establish similar relationships between each component. So, for example, the relationship has subject. The domain is work, body, person, concept, event, place, and there's one other, object. There are 10 classes. If we were to superclass these entities, we would hit logical contradictions in something both being a subject and the thing that it's a subject of. So this whole thing was just to avoid producing multiple has-subject relationships, but in FRBR we've had to declare 10 of them. Work has subject, work has subject expression, work has subject manifestation, etc. This is to allow inference rules. Yeah, so RDA would prefer to make life simpler, and they want to declare superclasses at this stage. There's a rule in semantic web which is AAA. Anybody can say anything about anything. We can't say to RDA, don't do this. They can say what they want. But F5, which is actually being used within the semantic web linked data community. Unfortunately, that version does superclass, and it alters the definitions of some of the entities. So FRBR will not approve the use of this version. Now it gets simpler. ISBD. ISBD only has one class. It's implied, it's not specifically mentioned, but it's implied that all of the attributes in ISBD refer to a single class, which is a resource. This, of course, is likely to be a superclass of work, expression, manifestation, and item. So when we come to look at the relationship between FRBR or the consolidated model and ISBD, we will be able to establish semantic links between them. ISBD also has no relationship properties because it's only got one entity to relate. So all of the properties in ISBD are attribute properties. Inverse properties as a result, so the whole modeling situation is much simpler. But what we do have to do is map the ISBD properties, the attributes, title, author, subject, to the corresponding ones in FRBR. Why do we have to do this? Because those billions of semantic instance triples that come out of the existing data that we have in library catalogues are variously going to be based on ISBD, FRBR, Mark 21, which itself is based on bits of FRBR and ISBD, etc., etc. Another interesting aspect of the ISBD modeling is that the content form and media type, which is a brand new area for ISBD, can be mapped to the RDA content and carrier types via an intermediary ontology, which is called the RDA ONIX Framework for Resource Categorization. So there's an underlying ontology for carrier and content types. So the content and carrier and media types are the slide. How do we improve the situation? So we found out that at least three namespaces in library land are going to have RDF representations of attributes and relationships, and they're going to cover the same domain, the same universe, that of the bibliographic metadata. So there have to be interoperable relationships between these. So that's FRBR, consolidated, ISBD, and RDA. I'm quite sure that there are many others waiting in the wings. Obviously, interoperability will improve quality and quantity of linked data resources, quantity through inferencing. There are three ways that I can see at the moment, three macro projects or initiatives that can improve this. One is the vocabulary mapping framework matrix, which is a project that finished last year, which provides an ontological spine. It's very, very close to Dagobert's hub idea. It provides an ontological spine. So this matrix acts like a black box that you plug your own vocabulary into, and inside the black box, a computation, a semantic computation, is made about what the closest equivalence is. That is the subject of an entirely separate presentation, and I'm going to say no more about it. But I will be talking about it at the Eurovoc conference in November in Luxembourg. Even the human-level management of the IFLA namespaces is going to improve interoperability. So that IFLA namespaces initiative is extremely important. And briefly alluded to by Antoine yesterday, is the W3C has recently formed an incubator group to examine issues and development priorities for linked data in the library domain. So it's the Library Linked Data Incubator Group. It's doing some very interesting work, and it's open because W3C, everybody has a chance to comment. The URLs are about to...